This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are very excited to get into this episode. It is somewhere around episode 154, 155. Is it 154 even?
156, I think.
Good God. I've been gone for 2 weeks. So I've been in China. I've had a great time in China. And I got to say, last year I was there around Christmas time, and I was talking about how, you know, they're actually opening a couple new craft beer bars, which is really great, but unfortunately they are not always taking care of their lines, so that was unfortunate. This year some great strides have been made, and last year there were only 3 breweries in town. Now there's like 10, and the beer festival is going strong. There's a really great movement going on. Congrats to Rohit Dugar, who is expanding Young Master Ales. They have a new facility and they're doing some great things. We had a chance to catch up with him. Our friends from Finback just happened to be in town. I got to host them around and drink a lot of really fun beer, eat some really fun food. And you guys totally should come with me next time, maybe around this time next year. Everybody's invited. Hong Kong, it's room for everybody. And the beers is fun right now. There's a big, really great energy. But that's out of town. What's happening in town, Mary?
So let's start with the Blue Point Cask Ale Festival. It is at Blue Point Brewing Company in, it's Patchogue, right? That's how you say
yeah,
it?
Patchogue, yep.
Yes. Anyway, that is going to be on April 16th. Tickets are available now. They usually sell out. They just went for sale on the 15th, and they usually sell out very, very fast. This thing sells out every year. It's a great time. I haven't been in a few years, but it's one of the better festivals that I've been to. So you can go to craftbeerfestivals.com/blue-point. Yep. Or just, you know, you can Google Blue Point Cask Ales Festival. Anyway, April 16th. Also, if you're coming from New York City, it is walkable from the train. So it's super easy. You don't need to drive or get an Uber or anything like that. It's with easy walking distance within the train.
Yes. But also on April 23rd and April 24th, there's TAP New York Craft Beer and Food Festival. The New York State brewing scene has been growing at a rapid rate and an awesome rate. The quality is high, and also a lot of new farm breweries are open, and there's a lot of nods towards New York State agriculture, both from barley and hops, and so that's really fun, and this is a really great place to see what's going on with that. TAP New York, April 23rd, 24th. tap-ny.com.
And that is at Hunter Mountain. So it is a drive if you're in the city or around. A lot of places run buses, both from the city and from other areas. I know there's usually some of the beer shops and good beer bars will run buses. So maybe Google a little, ask your local beer bar for
to get a bus.
Yeah. there are several that are organized already. Anyway, otherwise, it's a great time. You can get a room up there and stay. It's a beautiful area. And, I mean, with so many New York breweries, a lot of New York breweries don't actually pour generally outside of their local area or even outside their tap room. So it's a great opportunity to taste, like, all the amazing beers that are being brewed in New York State.
I'll be there with Kelso. Having fun. Oh, and there's a one that's really fun that you can't go to. We just found out it's sold out, but Pride of Brooklyn. Maybe next year everybody can show up to that. They do it every year at Littlefield. But then the National Homebrewers Conference is coming up, and there are actually still tickets left to that. June 9th to 11th in Baltimore, Maryland.
That, if you've never been, the AHA Homebrewers Conference, now named HomebrewCon, is absolutely amazing. It's a ton of fun. I'll be speaking on Thursday on Shortcut Sours, which I'm excited about. There's some amazing seminars. It's going to be a hard to choose.
That is also where the final round of the Beer Judge Certification Program, American Homebrewers Association National Homebrew Conference, will be taking place. We just had a really great weekend doing the Northeast Regionals at Single Cut. Big thanks to the Single Cut for hosting it. Thanks to all of the judges, all of the stewards, all the volunteers, all of the participants that did it. In particular, Andrew Luberto is one of my favorite local guys, and he's going to say a few things because there are some beer judge certification elections coming up on the governing committee. Andrew, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, and congratulations on your recent move up.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Move up to Master.
Yeah, to Master, right? Yeah.
Yes. That's awesome. There's not very many of you guys around, or ladies,
the Masters. It takes a certain type of dedication or insanity, and a very patient spouse, too. So
I can dig it. What is the BJCP governing committee? What is the value of the beer judge certification program? And tell us about yourself and why should we vote for you in this and how do we vote for you into this role?
Right. No, those are all good questions. I mean, the beer judge certification program, basically it was it's an organization that was started in the 1980s, and it was started for a set method for evaluating homebrew. So the competition that you mentioned over the weekend, homebrewers submit beer in the competition and people judge it. And, basically the organization was formed to try to kind of encourage knowledge and understanding of craft beer, mead and cider, also to kind of promote evaluation and communication, tasting skills, and most importantly, also develop standardized tools for evaluation and feedback. So it's not, something where you try a beer and you go, I like it or I don't like it. It's more of a kind of, quantitative and qualitative, measuring sticks involved. So the organization is really a great organization. It's international. We have members, as far, in Asia, Australia, Europe, North America, South America, and it's expanding every single day. And the region that I'm running for, the Northeast region, is actually the largest region of the BJCP. We have more than almost 30% more members than any of the other regions. And the reason for that is it includes not only the Northeast of America, but it also includes all international members as well. So I'd be representing people in Hong Kong and representing people in Australia and representing people in Argentina. So it requires someone who has a lot of dedication and someone with a lot of kind of drive as well. I hope that answers some of your questions.
Absolutely, and I can attest to your drive. You've done a lot of continuing education over the years. You recently held the mead exam locally, which there still haven't been enough of, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's very few of them. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I'm running for office. That It's not a status thing for me. It's a helping the organization thing. We're a volunteer organization. No one profits from it. So I looked around and I saw, because, as you guys know, I'm a mead enthusiast. I make a lot of home mead. I enter a lot of competitions for mead. And I kind of looked around and I said, there's not really a lot of judges. So, I set up exams for the next 3 years to certify judges, and yes. The last exam, we just had an exam in February, and we now have 12 new mead judges in the area, and then those people are going to go out and maybe hold exams, and it grows exponentially from there. So it's a matter of one of the reasons I'm running for office is I like to because I'm looking to try to improve and add to the organization, put my own stamp on things and help the growth of the organization more than promote myself.
And part of your platform is you wanted to build a wall between the beer judges and the wine judges, right? But we're going to make the wine enthusiasts pay for it. Is that true?
Yes, right. That's exactly it.
Gotcha. Cool. Keep that snooty stuff out of here.
You can buy my hat, so it makes beer great again.
Yeah.
They're red, but they actually, you can put two beers on either side of them and drink out of them.
Right. Dig it. Well, who can vote for you and how do they vote for you?
Yeah, you have to be a member of the organization, so you have to be a judge. And the way you vote is you go onto the website, bjcp.org, and beginning April 1st, they're going to open up an election page, and you go in there, and then, you know, you type in, you get an ID. When you become a judge, you get an ID number, and you type in your ID number, and then, you know, it takes you to the correct place, and then you can vote from there. It's pretty straightforward. You just go to the website April 1st. It's really easy to find, you know, bjcp.org, and it's, you know, they make it pretty prominent. And they also send a lot of emails out to the judges. I'm sure they've already seen, if you're a judge, you've probably already seen, you've probably already seen the emails.
Yep. We have. But if you're not a judge right now, you can get online and you can take your, at least the first part of the online test and get yourself a BJCP number if you pass. Is that correct?
No, well, if you take the online, you got to take the online and the paper. So it would probably, if you're not a member right now, it would probably be hard for you to get in, you know, in time to be a judge. Because even after you take the tasting exam, you have to go through a process to get registered. So it's really you probably have to be a member already. It'd probably be very, very hard for you at this point. Because we're talking 10 days away at this point now.
Yeah. But if you are a BJCP member, hop on April 1st and vote Andrew Liberto. Because he's our man.
We have one more announcement that we neglected to do.
Andrew, thank you. Talk to you soon. See you later.
Take care.
So Savor, which is an American craft beer and food experience, an amazing event that is in D.C. every year. This sucker sells out really quickly as well, usually within a couple hours, I believe. So member presale. So if you are a BA Brewers Association or an American Homebrewers Association member, you can buy tickets tomorrow at noon Eastern Standard Time. If you are not a member of either of those organizations, your tickets go on sale the following day on Wednesday at noon. So if you are interested in going to Savor, go to savorcraftbeer.com and check it out. That's June 3rd and 4th, and tickets go on sale for BA and AHA members tomorrow.
Not cheap, but totally worth it.
Yeah.
Delicious, delicious times. Speaking of delicious times, welcome to Ferment About It, episode 150-something.
Chris is still a little bit jet-lagged.
What time is it?
All right. Hong Kong is a whopping 13 hours away.
No, it's 12 now. You guys had daylight savings while I was out of there.
But it was 13 for most of the time.
That's
true.
That's right.
So it takes a little while to get over that. Anyway, we're excited about our show tonight.
I was going to make a joke about pictures and faces for radio, and it ties in here somewhere. But our show is about our good friend Mike Smith, who has a graphic novel on the story of beer. It is called The Comic Book Story of Beer, the world's favorite beverage from 7,000 BC to today's craft brewing revolution. Mike Smith, thank you for joining us on Ferment
About It. Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm flattered and excited.
Awesome.
It's the world's... As far as we're concerned, as far as we know, the world's first ever graphic novel about the history.
It's freaking awesome.
I know, it's awesome. It's really well done. It's so awesome.
I mean, you can't see it over the radio, but it
But if you haven't seen this book, go check it out.
Comicbookstoryofbeer.com, available on Amazon.
Awesome.
Wherever good books are sold.
The Comic Book Story of
Comic Book Story.
Even if you get the title wrong and you just say comic book.
If you Google it,
it's the only one. It's the only one.
Well, comics and beer, and it's interesting, there's a... interesting convergence of geekness with beer and comic books, and both, like, we're at peak beer geek and peak comic book geek right now. So it's been particularly interesting because there are a lot of actually Atlas Brewing, I think, out of Chicago. I was just out in Seattle, and Fremont Brewing is doing a comic book. Ska Brewing did a series of comics. So they're doing more like one-off comic books.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They're like little stories. I mean, this is a nonfiction. This is from the dawn of time to the present facts. And, you know, I'm very proud of the... we've gotten really good feedback about the action. You know, there's not a lot of fluff. It's a comic book, but there's not a lot of fluff. There's actually really good information.
There's great content in there. And just before we move on about the idea of comic, I'd be remiss not to mention our friend Bill Coleman, who's had the old Salty or the Salty Dog comic story for a long time.
Yeah, in the Ale Street News.
Yep. Fantastic stuff. Tell us about...
Oh, actually, one shout out to... Beer Judge Certification Program, actually.
Yeah.
We do these little things in the book. We can get into them if you're not, or whatever. They're little interludes we call Meet the Beer sections. And one of the things during the process of the book, I've been, you know, in contact with a lot of people getting permissions to use labels and whatnot. But I called up, in these Meet the Beer segments, we talk about, you know, representative IBUs, like statistics on the beer. And I took those, I amalgamated them primarily from BJCP. And I called them, and they were like the coolest. They're like, you know, because I was like, ooh, you know, a little trepidatious when I called them up or emailed them. And they're like, dude, that's exactly what we're like. They're so gracious with their information. They're like, that's what we're here for. That's exactly like this is exactly what we want. So shout out to BJCP.
Awesome. Yeah, you add the classic examples. You also do food pairings on from the hop character, malt character, bitterness, strength, and color.
Yeah, those are fun. Those little, and then like little essays about the individual. You know, generally the book is about beer in general.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the stories and how
the history of beer.
The history of beer in general. And one of the things that I find so amazing, you know, I'm a brewer. We can get into my history if you want. But one of the things that drew me to beer making is the fact that beer and civilization have been intertwined since the very, very, very beginning. And that is sort of the arc of the story of this book, is that we start at, you know, at the very dawn of civilization,
and the
dawn of beer are, you can't tell one from the other, and all the way up to, and you know, basically at the end of the book, we're talking about now is the best time in the history of the universe to be a beer drinker, because now what's happened is like we've reached, you know, it's expanding. What's happening now is we're taking the history and the future are exploding, you know, like people are pushing beers beyond, you know, we're looking back at old styles, saisons, lambics, sour beers, whatever, but then at the same time exploding Belgian IPAs and all these beers that never existed before are being, you know, like the lots of really, really smart and talented beer makers are doing lots of really fantastic stuff right now.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about your perspective in that. You've been in the brewing scene. You've been brewing for a solid 20 years.
Almost, right?
Almost. We're going to take a quick break on Ferment About. We'll be back with Mike Smith.
Just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
Good evening, and welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with Mike Smith, co-author of the comic book story of Beer, the world's first and only current graphic novel
that we know about,
on beer, and the history of beer, the story of beer, and the conclusion is that we are now in this time that there's no greater time to be a beer drinker or beer brewer.
Absolutely not.
And you.
And it's only getting better.
It's only getting better. The fusing of styles, the quality fusion of styles, people's skills are up, and they're making them palatable, not these things that just are undrinkable and fascinating for a sip, which is great. You've been brewing almost 20 years. What is your journey? What is your journey to this book?
How'd you get into it?
It's actually not interesting. I think it's interesting. It's been interesting. If it's not an interesting story, it's been an interesting ride, at least.
Fantastic.
So I grew up, I was kind of a science kid growing up, and I always was tinkering and whatnot. And I was actually supposed to go to school for biology. I was a biology major. I actually moved to Austin, Texas to go to graduate school, but as Austin, Texas tends to do, that didn't actually happen. It's a very good place to slack out. And this was like the actual early 90s, so it was a great place to slack out. But when I turned 21, the story officially starts when I turned 21. Right. But I'd been dabbling. Some of my friends had been making homebrews when I was in college. And when I turned 21, my mother bought me a kit and the Charlie Papazian book. And I had the luck of stumbling into some of the Michael Jackson books and realizing, you know, I specifically remember, you know, I didn't, I, when I was, you know, I'm 45 years old. So when I kind of came up as a beer drinker, it was the craft beer thing was happening, but not anything like it is now. So it was like, you know, beers were Schaefer bar bottles. And I remember, you know, if you found a place that had Sierra Nevada, it was like, oh my God, they have Sierra. Or, oh my God, they could, oh my God, Pete's Wicked Ale. Or, you know, like that early kind of early first wave or late first wave.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And, but I remember, It blew my mind. Like, wow, beer has flavor. And like, suddenly making my own was like, you know, this comes from human beings make this. It doesn't come from a package store. It comes from a person. And I was into cooking and like cooking and history and technology and just everything. You know, like beer has so many, it's so multifaceted. And my scientific brain really glommed onto it early. And so I just started homebrewing like crazy. And I actually had also had a lucky coincidence where my local package store, I was in Massachusetts at the time, so it's a packy. Okay. My packy encouraged the breaking up of six packs. And so I would like ride my, I had this warehouse job, and I'd ride my bike home and I'd stop and I'd get like three singles of beer, and I go home and I'd read the Michael Jackson book entries about those styles of beer. Yeah. And you know, this is 1992-93 or whatever, and then make one. And so that's kind of, you know, I self-taught sort of about the style of beer when style was kind of like a new phenomenon. And then eventually, like I said, I moved to Texas to go to graduate school, and didn't go to graduate school, but I did get a job at a homebrew store.
Right on.
And it was, we were right next to the late, great Waterloo Brewing Company, the first brew pub in Texas. And I'm still in contact with people from there. And
are they still open?
They are unfortunately not. They were the first brew pub in Texas, but they kind of got priced out of the neighborhood.
Gotcha.
Like, it was what's now the Warehouse District. I have air quotes. The Warehouse District, when Waterloo first started, was a warehouse.
Their house.
Yeah, they was, it was, you didn't really necessarily go to that neighborhood. And now it's, they were the first business entertainment, you know, like restaurant, bar. And now it's like a district, and they got, the landlord doubled the rent, and it was a not a happy time. A great place. But I was working at a homebrew store. And Steve Anderson, who actually unfortunately just passed away a couple months ago, was the head brewer there. And he would come over. Like, I learned so much on my own. And he would, and all the books we, I read every book that we sold. And so he would come over and ask me kind of technical questions. Yeah. And one thing led to the other. And he ended up just hiring me as an assistant brewer. And that's how, nice. And back in the early or mid, that was mid 90s at the time. It wasn't easy to get a brew. Like, you didn't go to brewing school. You didn't, you just had to know, be in the right spot and know the right people. And so that's how I started. And then actually when I was up on in Massachusetts, when Waterloo, I got a phone call that Waterloo was closing down. And I faxed my resume. Remember those days?
Wow.
And
not even the e-fax, the phone fax?
A telephone and a fax machine.
Amazing.
And ended up getting a job at Harpoon Brewing in Boston, Massachusetts. Right. And my family's from Mass, and I was kind of planning on moving back anyway, so the kismet was right. Mm-hmm. And so I moved back, and I started at Harpoon in 2001, and I worked there until 2010.
That's when I started brewing in 2001. So
that's where I cut my teeth.
What kind of beers was Waterloo making? And then
Waterloo was a sort of a class. Well, interesting story. One interesting. It was sort of a classic '90s brew pub. Golden ale, a bitter that was a fantastic English style bitter, a porter, IPA, standard lineup.
Sure.
The standard '90s brew pub lineup, and then seasonals. But one of the seasonals actually in late '90s. Was a, we called it Waterloo Grand Cru, and it actually, I mean, I can't take any, I was peripherally involved, I can't take any credit for it, but it won a gold at GABF, and it was a sour.
Wow.
In 90 whatever, and like there was no category. It was, I'm pretty sure, I could go back and look, but I'm fairly certain it was the first sour beer to ever win a medal at GABF. And it was in the Belgian specialty category.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, we called it Waterloo Sour because we called it Waterloo Sour. And we had a good relationship with beer writer Michael Jackson. And he came in and he says, oh, do my Michael Jackson impersonation. Oh, why did you call it Waterloo Grand Cru? And so he said, if Michael Jackson says, yes, we will. Yeah, we named it Waterloo Grand Cru. And it was actually, it was a fun beer to make because we just got, it was hard to get the bugs then.
Yeah, right.
And we got some and we had a Grundy tank. Mm-hmm. And we just fed, at, like every couple of weeks, we'd feed like half a barrel in, half a barrel in, half a barrel in. And it was, you know, like, we didn't know. We had no idea what we were doing. But it turned out awesome.
Yeah.
And it won a GABF medal, so which is...
That's cool.
Yeah. And now there are multiple sour categories, but like I'm pretty sure it was the
And people
first.
Still use Grundy's to sour beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of where I was going with like what kind of styles were going there and how you've seen the journey change and even what you reflect in the book.
I've seen, you know, that's, you know, one of the most... I remember I was at Harpoon when the whole extreme... Again, air quotes, sorry. When the whole extreme beer thing happened.
Right.
And with the Alstrom brothers up in Boston.
Sure.
And we were in Boston, so we were kind of really... And Sam Adams.
Yep.
Jim was very adamant about that, you know, with the Utopias and the Millennium stuff and the Triple Box or some of the earliest ones. And I remember one... What it was probably the first ever extreme... Or it probably was the first ever extreme beer fest that the... Beer Advocate guys put on, and Hildegard, whatever the Hoppet, Erthel mm-hmm. Hoppet,
yeah.
And that was the first time that, and this is something we kind of mentioned in the book, which I personally find just mind blowing, is that at the time, okay, so back at my Waterloo days or late mid to late 90s, is we were as American craft beer. Microbrewers, craft brewers now, we have this canon of European beer styles that we were replicating.
Right.
But then in the late 90s, 2000s, we started to become the rest of the world started to look at American brewers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like while we were going over and like, oh my God, Cantillon's so awesome and that, or trying to, you know, trying to score like, Westmalle yeast or something
right,
like that.
Right.
They were looking back, like they've been doing. Oh, that's I brew like this because my grandfather brewed like that.
Right.
Then they started like, oh wait, you know this. Some of those brewers who were going over there on their beer tours were bringing back, you know, pizza ports. Hoppy ales and whatever, all this new stuff. The IPA was effectively extinct in the 60s and 70s. You know, American craft brewers brought it back up, and that wave, all that, you know, the tide turned, and now it's like American. Like, if you want a job, go to England right now.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, they're dying for American craft brewers. Or Ireland. Or France. Hong Kong, like you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It's all exploding.
Actually, that's, Rui did say if I knew anybody that was looking at it, he's got a couple positions for some people.
Because that's what, you know, like now American craft brew has become this pinnacle that, you know, Guinness used to be, or Bass used to be, or Pilsner or Kelly used to be. Like the tide's going the other way. And like, I remember the Erthel Hoppet was that, it's like a, Wait, a Belgian IPA? Are you kidding? You know, it was that first one.
What does that
one
even mean? Yeah.
Well, it was the first one that I was aware of. And actually, Hildegard? I forget her name exactly. But the owner of that brewery was the, you know, I think she owned the brewery because her father owned it.
Right.
And she's like, oh, well, let's throw tons of hops in there. You know, but they were using their, you know, Castle Mall and their house yeast and cork and cage bottles. And this hybrid style came about. But then we started making them in America. And I remember Harpoon, when I was at Harpoon, we started making Belgian IPA, and which is now kind of like a style now.
Yep.
It was like very interesting for me to be close enough to the industry to see that kind of stuff happen.
Yeah.
You know, and like, but that's been happening for hundreds of years and all sorts of little, that's how Pilsner happened. That's how Stout happened. That's how every beer has some sort of story like that behind
yeah.
it.
And I think, you know, going into this book project, you have your own story with that, but clearly you didn't know everybody. Who did you meet along the way doing in your research for this, for this
all
book?
Sorts of great people.
And what kind of, what are some of your favorite parts? Some of your favorite enlightened stories or anecdotes, do you think?
Well, some of the my favorite anecdote I'll tell you afterwards. I don't want to talk about it. It's somewhat embarrassing for the person involved. But it's really neat. Like some of my favorite anecdotes. Like, one of the things so the book was written by, I'm a co-author. Mm-hmm. A very dear friend of mine, he's a high school friend, but we didn't go to high school together. He was a friend from that time. He had a car. So like our other best friend would drive him down to Cape Cod to visit us. So that's how we met when we were 15, 16 years old. And, Jonathan Hennessy is my co-author, and we actually lived in Texas together for a little while. Then he moved to Los Angeles and got into the movie business, but on a writing side. And one thing led to the other, and he ended up writing a nonfiction graphic novel about the Constitution of the United States in 2008, I believe. And it turned out it was a success, and it kind of put him on this nonfiction graphic novel path. And he did another one, the Gettysburg Address, about the Civil War. And the Gettysburg had just been finished, and I was working at a brewery. It was after I'd left Harpoon on Wonderful Graces, best job I ever had. But then I ended up at a smaller brewery in Massachusetts called Mayflower Brewing.
Okay.
And John's mother had a house in Plymouth, Mass. And so he came to visit her, and he came to visit me at work, and I gave him a tour. And as you can tell, I kind of like talking about it. and I get excited about it. And so I was showing him the brewery and the machines, but then sort of waxing poetic about just like little anecdotes about beer and how I think it's just so cool. I think beer is so interesting. It's just, you could always learn more about it.
Absolutely.
And it's fun to drink, delicious and fun to drink, and it's sociable. Like, everything's good. Everything's good. And so I was giving him this great tour, if I say so myself, no, of Mayflower, and he had the genius moment of the little ding, this is the next book. And that was probably 5 or 6 years ago. And then so one thing led to the other, and that's the origin story of the book. So like John, and then Aaron McConnell is the illustrator, and he and Jonathan, this is their third book.
Cool.
And so
his work is great. I mean,
it is cool. And this one fantastic. In particular, it's because the story goes from the dawn of time to the present, it gives him wide, there's a very wide range of things. One of my favorite chapters is the medieval chapter, because there's just like really cool, he did like the illuminated manuscript, like Gruet spelt out in like illuminated manuscripts, and just like, I really like that. That's a particular favorite chapter of mine, and particularly when I was getting the galley, where like the original art, when he was like emailing us these like scans, it was like, it's so exciting, because we'd been pretty immersed in it for a while at that, like with the writing part, and then to see it come to fruition was really neat. As a not, I never even really read comic books as a kid,
right?
So it's been another little fun anecdote is that Aaron and John were not really beer people, and their first introduction to like the world of beer was the JBF.
Mm-hmm. When you launched it.
When we launched it.
Wow.
Oh,
and
wow,
my
so
credit, which is like and then my first
introduction.
Yeah. And then 2 weeks later, my first introduction to the world of comic books was New York City Comic Con.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
So,
like,
that was the first comic I've been to comic book stores for signings and stuff, but I'd never even really been to like, and just like, wow. Like total immersion therapy.
That's pretty great.
That's awesome.
I forgot where I was going there, though.
We were talking about anecdotes, John.
Favorite parts
of the book. Oh, favorite parts of the book. And so that's how the book came. So I'm like the beer guy. And so I'm, of our trio. So, John and I co-wrote it. He did most of the heavy lifting. I did most of the, probably about a third to a-ish of the actual writing. But a lot of my contribution was overarching themes and where we're going and connecting disparate things and keeping it cohesive and factual. Like, I'm very proud of there's no baloney in this. It's like real, honest, real researched
straight to New Albion. Charlie Papazian started the thing, and also
I've talked to Charlie Papazian with no mustache. With only a mustache and the beard in the second one. That's from personal. I talked to Charlie about it, and he sent me pictures. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. It's totally. And these people who, like I even mentioned when we first started talking, how, you know, the Charlie Papazian book 20 years ago I started homebrewing with, and now it's like I'm signing a book to him. It's so weird, but so awesome. You know, beer, like I said, it's been a great ride. Beer has been a great ride. One of the more another wonderful thing is Michael Jackson, the beer writer, who none of us would be here right now if it wasn't for Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. And but unfortunately, you know, I had the great pleasure of meeting him on a number of, when he was in Texas. When I was in Texas, he used to come to the brew pub a lot. And we also, the brew shop that I worked at organized beer tastings with him. And so I got to kind of hang out with him. One of my prized possessions is I have a second edition of Great Beers of Belgium with Two Mike Brew Belgium.
Nice.
Michael Jackson. It's one of my prized possessions. But he's, you know, unfortunately he had died in 2008. No, it was
that long
than
ago?
Yeah,
wow.
It was longer than that. And, but I found there was an archive. His archive was bequeathed to a university in New York, in England. Mm-hmm. And I somehow stumbled upon a All About Beer article about that or something. And I randomly emailed the university. And it just so happens that I got the guy who, like, the history professor at this university. And he put me into contact with Michael Jackson's longtime girlfriend and stepdaughter. And so, because I wanted a lot of this stuff to use likenesses and whatnot. Do we
have to? No,
no, it's good.
Yeah, to use likenesses.
Just making sure that those are two different people.
Oh, yes, two different people. but it was kind of really neat to. So, and then this guy, the university professor, actually a week later retired. So just so happened to have gotten him at the exact right time.
Oh, man.
And he connected me with Patty and Sam. And, you know, because I wanted to just, you know, using someone's likeness and whatever, I just wanted to keep everything on the up and up.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to let them know and contact them. And then, you know, I had some pictures of me and Michael Jackson, and I emailed it to them, and they were, like, telling me how touched they were, because, like, oh, it's great to see those. Because, you know, these are pictures they haven't seen. And, you know, and to see how well, how he touched so many, because they are, you know, they're beer. Michael Jackson's loved ones know about beer and all that, but I don't think they really understand how much he affected everything.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of neat. That was kind of neat to be part of.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to have to wrap up, but I have to ask this question, and I'll make it general, because so what styles of beer are you enjoying drinking right now?
I like all style. Well, that's what my standard question.
I hate that question, but I kind of like it.
That's what I like about beer. What I like about beer is that I don't have to pick a favorite style. I love the fact, you know, saisons were really hard to find, really, 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 really hard to find. And the fact that they're, like, almost ubiquitous now, I like that.
And we have breweries that are only doing saisons.
Only doing saisons, which is insane. It's insane. Because I was like, they were hard to get. Yeah. There was DuPont and a couple others. And, up until 5 or 6 years ago. I like that. I like, honestly, a good Pilsner any day of the week. And that's when we were at GABF, I was, because it's so overwhelming, so many different beers. One of the days, I drank nothing but Pilsners. I just went around, whoever had a Pilsner, I was like, I want that, I want that. And my favorite one actually meddled, so.
Awesome.
Oh, wow. I have one quick question before you're done, actually. My favorite question to ask writers usually is, so your book works not just as, like, it's a really good read, but it also is a pretty good reference book. Was there anything in your research that you couldn't include but you wanted to?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, a lot. We actually, had to cut about 50 pages.
Oh, my God.
Because we were, as you know, we can go on and on and on, just like this radio show. There's only so much you can fit in. And, you know, we were writing and writing and writing. Our publisher, we're on 10-speed press. And Jonathan's other books have been a little more forgiving, smaller publishers that are a little more forgiving. But, you know, when we sold the book to 10-speed, they have, you know, there are people, it's this many pages, like they've calculated out. So, like, there's no wiggle room for, you know, so we had to actually, unfortunately, cut out a lot of things. You know, one of the regrets is that we actually have a very Western bias in this book, very European bias. But we had a lot of stuff about Central American, South American, Asian, that kind of had to get. That's for the next. That's for the sequel.
I like awesome. It. I like. I want.
I would read that
sequel.
As supplementary
Absolutely.
Material. Yeah.
Yeah. And then so, but it makes us, you know, it's a little ethnocentric, unfortunately. Mm. But when you look at the sort of paradigm that we're working in, like most of what people think about it here is the Western tradition of beer.
Yeah.
We stuck a couple things in there, but in general, we had like lots of research that we did on. John did most of that, but research on non-Western.
On the international.
Yeah.
Graphic novel of homebrewing would be cool. That's a one, you know, we have a lot of homebrewing books out there, but graphic novel, that'd be cool.
And it works out really well, like in the beer chapter, I'll take the one that I wrote, but it's, you know, they say a picture paints, picture tells 1,000 words, and because I remember actually in the Charlie Papazian book, there's a classic cartoon in it of, in the beginning of the all grain chapter, it's like a guy with his head in his hands and like spinning thoughts about, it's just like, it gets, when you read about it, you get sucked into this rabbit hole, and if to show pictures, it makes so much more sense. And so the processes, we all know, are really simple. But right. when you try to explain it to someone, it gets yep. really technical and scary.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so with in pictures, I think it's really good. I would love to do something like with, you know, maybe with Brewers Association safety. Beer brew safety, something like that, like a little,
like a little airplane thing.
Like they used awesome. To do. They used to do that for the in the military. Like there are a lot of, you can find them, like military. You know, how to load a Sidewinder missile onto something, but it's just, the military decided that it's much more effective to do, if you're teaching 18-year-olds to load weapons onto something, give them a comic book. They'll read it, and they'll understand it.
Yeah.
Mike Smith, thank you so very, very much for joining us.
Thank you for this book.
Yeah.
Yes. So enjoy. Check out The Comic Book Story of Beer, available online and at all at
bookstores nationwide.
Everywhere.
ComicBookStoryOfBeer.com.
We'll
Thanks for listening to
next Monday with
The Man About It.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. No.